Welcome to episode 7 of Binging Bridgerton, a podcast going episode by episode through the new Shondaland historical romance series on Netflix. With me today are my co-host Amrita. Good morning, Amrita.
Good morning, Beth.
And we are very excited to have our top friend and Indian film critic Uday with us too. Good morning, Uday.
Hi, Beth.
We can't quite believe our good fortune that you were willing to watch the show all the way through episodes 7 and 8 and talk about them with us, because we weren't sure if this was up your alley or not. Any kind of general impressions about diving into this show that you want to talk about?
I mean, it's not only not up my alley, I've never been up this alley before at all. I've never read a Regency romance. And whatever films I've seen are your Austens or a couple of the other adaptations, but that's about it. So I really had nothing to compare it with, but I really enjoyed it. I got through it with a minimum of fuss, which, you know, as someone who watches Hindi films and writes about them, just that I could get through it without complaint till episode 8 was great.
In normal years, most weekends, I feel like I wake up on a Saturday morning and I have a Facebook message from you that says something like, oh God, have you seen blah, blah, blah? And I almost never have, because the films haven't, you know, released here or whatever. But I just love it because I know that I'm going to have something great from you to read coming up in a few days. Welcome to the Ton. And Amrita, I know, is our in-house Regency romance expert and can help you navigate the streets here if you get lost along the alley. But it sounds like you survived great and we're so excited about it. Episode 7, when I first thought about, you know, how we would sketch out what to talk about this episode, I thought, oh, there's so little that happens compared to some of the immediate previous ones. But really, there's still plenty happening, of course. We left off with the breakup of Colin and Marina's engagement because it was revealed that Marina was pregnant and has been the whole time she's been in London. And so one of the big themes in this episode is the fallout socially that happens, especially for the Featheringtons, but also how the Bridgertons, everybody's favorite family, is going to deal with this drama. And fortunately, Daphne takes it upon herself to come back to London with Simon in tow to try to squash the rumors. And her mother is thrilled about this because she thinks, well, with the Duke and Duchess in town, no one would dare say anything and then they'll forget about it. Amrita, in your experience with romance novels, can a Duke and Duchess arriving really sway the gossip that juicy? Can they really squash it just by showing up?
I think yes, because what Daphne and Simon are doing is they're basically painting a target on their back and trying to redirect the conversation. So Colin and Marina's story is basically incredibly scandalous in a time period where, you know, we've talked about this before, about how women of the Ton appear to have absolutely zero sex education. And so suddenly you have this unmarried, beautiful young debutante who is, you know, not just pregnant, but also now revealed to be the kind of scheming young woman who would try to hook the younger son of a very prominent Ton family. So this is incredibly titillating. This is very scandalous. It gives everybody a chance to go at both these families. And so when Daphne and Simon come back, suddenly everybody's like, oh, because not only do they have this wild love affair in the eyes of the Ton, but also Daphne and Simon are right next to royalty. So everybody wants to curry favor with them as well, which is why you kind of see the dynamics change between Daphne and her mom, and also in the way that Lady Featherington is now treating Daphne and trying to establish a relationship with Daphne as separate from her mother. And now, you know, we've talked about how Violet Bridgerton has this relationship with her son, and how, you know, the power dynamics are so different. But we also see that now playing out with Violet and Daphne.
I love the sparring between Violet and Daphne. Daphne has a great line that I actually wrote down, where she, when Violet's talking about how to tamp down the scandal, and Daphne says, pretending that nothing is amiss is the perfect way to lure the ignorant into submission. Is it not, Mama? The woman who plays Violet does such a great job of expressing that confusion and pain mixture on her face, where she's like, what is she talking about? And so there's all sorts of great little looks among the Bridgertons during this, like, one of the brothers looking at the other like, what are they talking about? And they're like, I don't know.
I really like Daphne in this episode. Both Daphne and Marina, they're at their best in this episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Daphne, with a little knowledge, as opposed to like a sort of innocent and naive Daphne, is makes for better viewing. I think she's a more interesting character after she has enough knowledge to sort of make decisions, even if it's like tough for her.
We have to talk about Colin and Marina, because Colin is. Uday, as a man, like, what do you think about Colin being so in love that he refuses to believe anything until Marina tells him herself?
I mean, he's a bit weird, isn't he? I mean, he just sort of he really falls into it, and you can really see that this is like his, even though he's rumored to be a sort of man about town and play around, but this is obviously the first time that he's really fallen for someone, and it's for me what was a bit surprising is that he kind of falls out of it fairly quickly once she tells him, and he's pretty much okay by the next episode. And I was wondering whether that struck you as slightly convenient writing on the show's part, that he goes from being absolutely nuts for her and telling her that, you know, if you'd approached me earlier, I would have married you even if I knew you were with child, going from that to sort of seemingly okay, like, very quickly after that.
I think it was convenient, but also I think it goes back to Anthony's point where he says that basically Colin doesn't know anything, and he is basically a baby, you know, like what you're saying, you know, he's just so naive. Like, he's basically Daphne's brother. Like, you can just see, like, the two of them just lost in the world. All the Bridgertons, actually, you know, like, you can see that they have grown up in this wonderful family where they all love each other and have a very rosy view of the world. And then throughout the season, you keep seeing them meet people that educate them that actually the world is slightly different from what you think. There's Anthony with Sienna, there's Daphne with Simon, there's Benedict with Lord Granville, and there is Colin with Marina. But I really enjoyed that part where Colin and Marina have their big meeting, and he tries to slut shame her, and she shuts him down. Immediately. She's just like, no. You don't get to say that about me. Like, you can be angry at me, and I know I did a bad thing, but you don't get to, like, say that about me. And I think that's the point where Daphne understands a little bit more about the world and about herself, is when Marina says, I had nobody to guide me, to tell me what was right from wrong. And Daphne is like, well, I had a mom, but, you know, she did such a crap job at it that I also had nobody to tell me anything. And I had to go out there. And that's the basis for their sympathy.
And they bond over a sense of, in their own minds, been done wrong by men. Because at this point, Marina still thinks that, what's his name, George, has just abandoned her. I know you've mentioned, Amrita, that Marina is not much of a character in the books, and I would love to know more of her backstory. We don't know what she knows of the world. She probably didn't know how one becomes pregnant either until it happened to her. And so she and Daphne don't talk about that, but they directly very much, but they can also relate on that. And she has that speech about, I thought myself in love, and then this happened. And Daphne's very empathetic to that, and it's very sweet.
Yeah.
Uday, what's a plot point you'd like to discuss?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about Simon and Daphne kind of being mad at each other, but also not being able to sort of keep their hands off each other.
yeah.
which is which leads to a hilarious opening. I thought it's one of my favorite scenes in the series, where she's where all the sexual energy of the episode before this, where they were just like nonstop having sex, and that energy has nowhere to go now. So she's playing Beethoven angrily on the piano, and he's shooting birds because, you know, when you can't have sex and you're mad at your partner, then obviously that's what you did back then.
You've just reminded me, and this is inappropriate, but I'm going to say it anyway. You remember in Peanuts how Schroeder is always playing Beethoven and Lucy is out stomping around?
No!
Sorry. But it's so great that it's Beethoven, too. And I'm so glad you're on this episode, because another thing you and I like to talk about is Western classical music. So when you hear those notes, you're like, oh, this is not good.
It's not, and it's just played so hilariously, and we are not even given any indication that he hit any of the birds. He just keeps shooting, but we don't see any of the birds fall down. So she's probably just like ruining his target practice as well, which is just frustrating him even more. That scene I thought was hilarious, and it kind of, but they have another, like they end up having sex at night in between all their fighting. And then they just go straight back to fighting. So I thought that was like excellent bit of sort of wish fulfillment on the part of the episode that, you know, we're just going to pretend, we're just going to take a break from the fighting, let them have sex, and then they can just go straight back to where they were without having resolved anything.
I really like that part because, like, it is... You know, Beth and I have talked before about how maybe Simon and Daphne's origin stories or their love story is not as well fleshed out as it could have been because it's a lot of convenient writing, as you put it there. But I really like the fact that here you kind of see their relationship where they say these things to each other and they're clearly angry and they feel able to be angry with each other, but also intimate with each other. And when they're having sex, you know, it's oral sex. And the whole, like, you know, the way that it is filmed, you know, where, you know, you're looking at it from above them. And you, again, like, you know, the emphasis, again, is on how Daphne is feeling. And that's something that I've noticed repeatedly throughout the series, which is that where the camera is looking when the two of them are having sex. And we'll come back to this in the next episode. But they have, like, this really intimate sexual encounter. And then immediately it moves to him saying that, I don't trust you. And then her saying that, you know, like, I understand that you don't trust me, and also I don't trust you because you lied to me. So they both have that, and also, like, you know, apparently the series really doesn't want to talk about it, but the betrayal that he's talking about is basically assault. And, you know, like, how do you get across from there? So it's a really interesting point in the relationship and the way that they choose to show it, where later on where they're at the concert and Daphne is feeling emotional and he reaches across and holds her hand and he's able to be kind to her even when they've had this, you know, giant fight and they're continuing to have that giant fight. And I think that is a better indication of the relationship, you know, the best version of their relationship that they could have versus like any of the romantic bits that we've seen before.
This conversation is making me realize that maybe Simon, his first inclination to show affection is touch or physical. And we know he, you know, obviously as a kid had problems with words, but even as an adult, it's like he gets to gestures before he gets to words. And we see some wonderful, you know, him really coming into words later in the show. But even that little gesture at the concert is, you know, he doesn't lean over and whisper to her. He touches her.
Right. And, you know, if maybe Daphne also picks up on that, because, you know, when he comes back after getting beaten up,
this fight,
she goes and sort of starts dabbing at his wounds and stuff, and like is you know, reaches out physically to him, which was also instead of just like talking.
Can we just talk about that fight for a quick second? Like, I find it weird that we see Simon spending all this time in the ring. He's clearly in like excellent physical shape. He's a boxing aficionado. He like puts in hours of practice. And then every time Anthony shows up, and Anthony doesn't even know how to punch properly, but he like ends up beating up Simon like every single time. And I don't get it. Like, is it because he's a brother? Like, Simon just takes his punches?
I mean, you could say that Anthony is maybe just a little madder in that moment. So he has a bit of momentum. But yeah, it doesn't make sense beyond a point. He'd get walloped by...
Absolutely. Let's talk about Lady Danbury's party, which is so fabulous. So Lady Danbury tells Daphne that she has to come to a party at her house, which is all the married ladies of the town. And I have to admit that going into this, I didn't know whether this was going to be boring or if it was going to go the way that it actually did go, when in fact it's a den of iniquity with and a very wonderful counterpart to the men's club, where they are gambling and drinking and doing things they shouldn't. And here the women are as well, although there's no sexual aspect to it the way there is at the men's club, of course. But all the women are fully decked out, jewels everywhere, bright colors. They're smoking, they're drinking, they're making a lot of noise, and they're gambling away money on what looks to me to be the least mental energy required card game that you could possibly have. Like, this is not strategic poker. This is luck. This is nothing but luck. And Daphne, of course, because she's a Bridgerton, is really good at it. And it's wonderful, again, to see Daphne come into power that she has and how she learns to talk with the other ladies of the ton, which we haven't seen her do yet. For all we know, she's not particularly well prepared for, because these women are, I think, all supposed to read as at least a little bit older than she is. Lady Danbury does not seat her at a table with the other newlyweds of that season, right? She's with women who have children or women who are well established. And the way they educate her about married life in terms of, I actually love it when my husband's off at war, because I have the freedom of being a married woman who's protected, and I don't have to deal with him, and the kids never have gotten to know him anyway, so they don't care, which is a little crushing to Daphne. I love that whole scene, and Lady Danbury once again proves that she's the boss. I love her so much.
She's also having way more fun than any other character on this show.
She's earned it.
Yeah. With the exception of Benedict, I guess, who, can we talk about Benedict for a minute?
Yes.
So Benedict, a couple of episodes ago, was introduced to the idea of homosexuality. And at first we think that, oh, he's actually handling this rather well for a man of his era. And that is until he discovers that Granville is married and has a wife, when he suddenly turns all puritanical and it's like, how dare you have an affair with a man while you are married, when at the same time the entire town is full of men who are married but have mistresses. Like, what is that about?
Yeah. As you said earlier, like, the moment he gets an argument back at him, you can see on his face, he's like, oh, that was a good point.
Yeah, it's that sends him off to Genevieve. The argument directly sends him off in a carriage to Genevieve to, I don't know, live outside society or whatever Granville tells him.
Right.
Do we think that Benedict knows that Genevieve isn't French?
I don't think so. He's not very smart.
Uday, would you be willing to talk about Eloise a little bit?
Eloise remains a frustrating character throughout the series for me. It's kind of like she's the like supposed to be our sort of like the modern day person who's just been put in period dress, and she's sort of, but she's acting like she's actually in our century. And I just can't shake that, like, from any of her scenes. Yeah. So out here, she's still trying to unmask Lady Whistledown. she's falling out of favor with the queen who had told her to report to her. All signs point to the Modiste, but they're pointing so hard to the Modiste that, you know, one starts to get the feeling that it might be a red herring because it's really not pointing anywhere else.
Right. This show isn't half as smart as it thinks it is. But yeah, like Eloise, like what Uday said exactly, you know, like she is an anachronism. Like she shows up and there is a way to write this character in that way, which is, you know, like she is a woman of her time, but then she feels restricted and confined. There are any number of Regency heroines who follow that template, but the way that they do it in this show is incredibly ham-handed and heavy, and so you lose sympathy for Eloise really quickly all throughout. And also because she is such a sulky, unpleasant person. Like there are only a few points in the story, usually when she's with Penn, a couple of times when she's with Benedict, that she's not the sulky, you know, a person on the verge of like a tantrum. But otherwise, if you see her with her mother, if you see her with Daphne, if you see her out and about, like she is constantly just annoying. Like she is clearly just lost in a world of her own where she has just, she's fixated on the idea of Lady Whistledown, and you don't know, like, does she admire Lady Whistledown? Like, what does she hope to achieve by unmasking her? And it tries to retcon the whole thing and say that, oh, you know, she's just trying to unmask Lady Whistledown so that she can reclaim the reputation of the Featheringtons and therefore help her friend Penelope. But it comes really late in the game, and you're like, well, why did she start in the first place? So her motivations are so obscure that you're just like, this entire storyline makes no sense.
You know what she wants is an internship.
Right.
Right. She wants to learn how to be Lady Whistledown, and I cannot fault her for that, but she's so maddening.
At the end of the episode, we come to the big revelation, which is that Daphne is not pregnant, and Simon and she have made this bargain, which is that if she is pregnant, then Simon's going to step up and be the father to the child, because, you know, he's not one to run away from his responsibilities. But if she's not pregnant, then because he doesn't trust her, they will lead very separate lives, and they will no longer live together as husband and wife. And Daphne finds out in dramatic fashion. Beth, have you ever had your period come that way? Like, while you were sitting down at a concert and then suddenly it was just like Gush City?
No. But nor have I looked around surprised at absolutely everyone and then dramatically run into the world's grandest bathroom. So maybe if I had been in that setting, I would. But I doubt it.
I was just like, generally, like, I think maybe they wanted to show that she really thought that she was pregnant, and therefore she just didn't expect to get her period in the middle of the concert. But the way it plays out is that Daphne apparently has a really heavy flow when she gets it, and she feels it coming on, and so she runs into the bathroom. And it's the way that they show normal female things in this show is actually really affecting. I mean, I make fun of it, but it is really interesting to me to see how normal things that we take for granted or that we are used to as women is portrayed in time, like period appropriate ways. So the way that she is checking to see whether she has started menstruating is to, you know, first of all, she's wearing this dress with like layers and layers and layers. And so she needs to pick that up, and then she has to pick up, you know, a piece of cloth, and then she's wiping herself to see. And it's a lot. Like, it really, like, I don't know, how did that play for you, Uday? Because I know how it played for me as a woman to watch another woman in that situation, say 200 years ago. But I was wondering, like, how did that play for you?
I thought it was very well done, as in with the concert and like the whole thing. Like, it was obvious that it had to go one way or the other to, you know, for this. I mean, that would have been the obvious episode ending, but it was just done very well, I thought. And Simon still doesn't know which way it's gone, so he's just like, you know, his life is basically has just run out of the room. And now he's just waiting for that. So, but yeah, it was affecting. And she breaks down after that. And it's just, again, as you say, these are not things that, at least for me, I haven't seen many dramas or films hinge around these things. I've never sort of seen periods be a plot point in a major drama to this right. extent. So yeah, it was something new in terms of, you know, for me also, just to see this play out and being done in a dramatic way. I thought it was quite effective.
I also thought it was very effective that when her mother comes in, you don't see them really speak, but she understands somehow. And that was touching, given how much distance has been between them because of Lady Violet, you know, because of Daphne feeling so abandoned by her mother. And I also love that the music at the end of this episode, the music stops suddenly, the music from the concert, as all this is happening, and it really amps up the drama. And when you see Simon's face, I couldn't quite figure out what he's supposed to be thinking. And I was almost wondering if he somehow knows what's happening, even though he couldn't possibly. And is this some kind of hint at, you know, that they have this emotional link even when they're physically separated or something? I don't know, but it was very dramatic.
And not to forget, there is another very dramatic thing happening during this thing, cut in with it in a montage, which is Marina is trying to end her own situation. She's having tea, which will hopefully for her, she wants to induce an abortion. And that's also tied up with this. So it's a good counterpoint.
It is. Yeah. Parallels are something this show does very well, I think. I'm not sure I noticed them the first time I watched it, but I'm really enjoying seeing all of them as we go back through and try to dig in. One of the themes I feel that comes out of this episode is trust and how people do and don't trust each other in various pairings. So we see things like, I think, some fairly amazing moments of trust between Daphne and Marina, or Colin and Daphne, but then also major relationships where it has disintegrated, like Violet and Daphne, or obviously Daphne and Simon. Did that strike either of you as well?
Yeah, it's because of the breaking of the bridges. Mostly all the relationships in this episode are fraying or having a tough time. You know, it's all the way from Benedict and Granville, all the way up to Simon and Daphne. And I think that builds to that crescendo in a way that, you know, everything falls apart with the knowledge that there is exactly one episode to put it all together. So I do like how the series sort of throws everything into disarray with one to go.
A character we haven't talked much about across this podcast is Will, the boxer. And so many pivotal things happen in his space and in conversations he has with Simon in particular. He's really Simon's confidant and advisor as much as Lady Danbury is. But also Lord Featherington and Will talk about, you know, trying to set up this illegal bet. So there's an interesting trust relationship there between two people who probably wouldn't otherwise ever even interact. And it's Lord Featherington in this conversation who makes the show's one actual recognition that this is a world with enslavement of Black people in it. Mm-hmm. And it's this kind of passing thing about him referring to Will's father having been a soldier in the American colonies and running away to seek his freedom. And I hadn't noticed this at all when I first watched, and it's such an important moment. I'm glad I read articles where people point that out trust is a big issue in the Featheringtons as well, because of course Lady Featherington and her children have no idea what Lord Featherington is actually up to, and as long as it's going well, they don't care. But when it starts, as we'll get to, that relationship too had some big secrets in it. Let's talk a little bit about the power of conversation among women. Amrita, could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Daphne and Violet, of course, have their little conversation about like how she just wouldn't impart any information whatsoever, and how that has negatively impacted Daphne's life in ways that Violet couldn't even imagine. But also, when Daphne needs an insight into her own husband, the person that she goes to is actually Lady Danbury. And she knows that Lady Danbury is the person to ask. And again, through Lady Danbury, Daphne is also able to find things out from Marina via the den of iniquity. Is that what you call it?
That's what Lady Danbury calls it.
And it's, you know, we've talked before about the whisper networks between the women and how they utilize it and they wield it as a weapon. And here you see another version of it. Like, it's not as obscure. Like, they're not playing it out through the servants. Here, it's a society of women who have created a sort of parallel universe amongst themselves where they can just be whoever it is that they want to be. And they don't have to worry about maintaining a facade for society. It implies, you know, you were talking about trust a little while ago, but this also requires a certain amount of trust, where they're being themselves in front of each other in a way that they can't be even at the balls or the parties of the time. So it really is a society of sisterhood that we see here.
I agree, and just to add to that, I think the show sort of makes clear, especially by contrasting the Lady Danbury's party, which is you know, it's very bright, there like a lot of warm colors, with the men's party, which ends up with Simon and Anthony brawling. And there, that's very severe. There's no background chatter. It's dark brown and black. And the women are talking very openly with each other, and the men are just sort of really stiff, and they're taking jabs at each other. And it just, you can see how, like, the show is saying that women talking to women actually helps get things done and is of some use, while men talking to each other just makes things worse.
That we can all agree on.
I would like to ask Uday, of the social events that you have experienced so far in Bridgerton up to this point, so through episode 7, which one would you most like an invitation to?
I'd actually like the boxing match. Thought that was because it was a nice mix. You saw, yes, like everyone from like the lords to, I'm guessing, like the normal folk of the town, and there were men and women. And I thought that was a fun atmosphere.
Excellent. Amrita, which one would you like to go to?
Vauxhall with the fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
I've been reading Regency romances my whole life, and I've always wanted to go to Vauxhall with the fireworks. And they did it really well in the series, you know, like they showed it really well. Like, it really looked...
If you have not seen the most recent adaptation of Vanity Fair, they also go to, I believe it is actually Vauxhall, but somewhere very like that, and you see the same kind of spectacles. I would recommend that I love it anyway, but the depiction there is also quite magical. I would most like to go to that masquerade type party with the acrobats and all the birds and everything that was a couple episodes ago. That one looked like good fun.
It's making me realize that, you know, our modern day parties are so boring. They're
so boring. I don't even like parties, but I miss parties because we're going on 10 months of pandemic, and I just miss other people in person. I think that's it for episode 7 of Bridgerton on the podcast, Binging Bridgerton. We'll be back soon for episode 8. Before then, Uday, can you tell our listeners where they can find more of you and your work online?
You can find me on Twitter at Uday, that's Y-O-O-D-A-Y. And I post most of my pieces there, so you can probably find my work there also.
And Amrita, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter as AmritaIQ or on YouTube at Amrita by the Book. And I also co-host a Bollywood podcast called Khan Ban.
And I'm on Beth Loves Bolly on Twitter. And we look forward to seeing you all next time for episode 8.